This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, from next, what's the Shabbos? I think we'll start the shiur at 7:15. Shabbos is coming out earlier, so we're there 15 minutes earlier. In the Midrash on this week's parasha, there's the famous story on Metzora. There was a case with a particular peddler, a merchant, a trader, shehoyo mechazer ba'ayoris, shehoyo samuchos l'tzipori, and his territory used to be the towns around and about the area of Tzipori, which is up in the north. Shehoyo machriz ve'imer, and he used to go around shouting out, announcing, advertising, man boy lemizban samchaim. Who wants to buy a medicine which ensures life? Both kinole, they all came. Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi Yossi, the Soshat, the two cleaners. Rabbi Yanai was sitting and learning pshat in his home. Interesting that a man as great as Rabbi Yanai used to learn pshat, to learn them. He was putting in effort into understanding the simple meaning, the straightforward meaning. Of course, what was pshat, what was simple for Rabbi Yanai, would have been complicated for us. Shamei de Machriz, he heard this man shouting, "Man boy samchaim, omele to sak lehocho zvinli." So Rabbi Yanai went to the window and said, "Come up here, please sell me some too." Omele lav an tzorich le v'loi bekavos. He said, "You don't need it, and people like you don't need it." Atrachole, he pleaded with him and pressurized him. Salit Legabe, the good salesman, best thing you can say to your customer is, "No, you don't need it, it's not for you. And the more you say that, the more they say, "Please, let me have a look. So eventually he goes up to him, Salit Legabe, took out a Sefer Tehillim, Hero le posuk miho isha chofetz chayim, and he showed him the posuk, "Who is the man who wants life?" Maksiv Basri, what's written after that? Natsoy l'shen chomero, su mero v'asei toiv. Very simple. Stop talking Lashon Hora. Don't do bad and do good. There's the simple formula. Amar Rabbi Yanai, the most fascinating part of the Medrash is never quoted. That's the part which everybody knows. Does anybody know how the Medrash goes on? One person says, "Did you see the Medrash recently, though?" The most. How many people have heard the Medrash before? And the next part, you see, the most important part doesn't get quoted. Om Rabbi Yana, I said Rabbi Yana, Kol Yomai Ayusikori Aposu Kaze. All my life, Om Rabbi Yana, Ap Shlomo Machriz. Rabbi Yana says, Shlomo said the same. Vayomer, he also announced, Shemo Piv Ulushemo, one who guards his mouth and his tongue, Shemo Mitzores Napshe, is at the same time guarding his soul from trouble. Om Rabbi Yana, I said Rabbi Yana, all my life I've read this posuk in Mishlei, Shoyme Piv Ulushene, Shoyme Mitzores Napshe, V'lo Ayusi Yodea Hichanu Poshut, and I didn't know how simple it was, even though I've just been trying to learn Pshat, I never knew how poshut this was. Ad Shebo Reichel Zeh V'Hidia Mi Ha'ish Chofetz Chaim. Until this merchant came and he announced about the Mi Ha'ish Chofetz Chaim, then I realized for the first time how straightforward the posuk of Shoyme Piv Ulushene, Shoyme Mitzores Napshe is. What's the one got to do with each other? That's the difficulty. That first part, no good. It's a nice story with the merchant who goes around. It's a little bit of a childish story, really, isn't it, on the surface? Goes around selling a life potent, takes out a chapter of Tehillim. We need to understand it. But the interesting part is Rabbi Yana is linking it to the posuk in Mishlei, saying, "I never understood the posuk of Mishlei until the merchant read out the posuk from Tehillim, Mi Ha'ish Chofetz Chaim." Not just the linkage, but the way the merchant read it, that is what was important to him. I'm going to come back to the Medrash. And it's a medrash that one can talk about for many hours on its own, and which I'm not going to do. There's only one aspect that I'm going to, one dimension that I'm going to use or illustrate in this medrash and through this medrash. And to do so, I'm going to take the opportunity of saying over a portion of the shiur that I gave the ladies this morning, because it is so fundamental to so many issues. Linking tzoris, linking a person's difficulties and troubles to his own actions, which is after all what Rabbi Yana is focusing on. Shomer piv ulashoinoi shomer mitzoris nafshi. That one who watches his mouth and his tongue is in fact saving himself from tzoris. Which goes back to the whole question that Eeyore deals with. The relationship between man's suffering and man's deeds. And you remember, and through the series that I've been giving the ladies every now and again when there's a milestone, I repeat it on Motzei Shabbos, and you're aware that Eeyore deals with the incompatibility of three religious axioms. The three axioms are, number one, that God is omnipotent. Number two, that God is just. And number three, that Eeyore is a tzaddik, which it actually says in the beginning of the Sefer. It tells us that Eeyore is a tzaddik. And dealing with those three, or trying to synthesize those three, is impossible. If God is omnipotent, and if God is just, and if Eeyore is a tzaddik, why does he suffer? And that's the older, age-old question, and as you know, our tradition is that the Sefer Eeyore was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, and he was troubled by that question. Why it is, the Gemara in Brochus brings it already in Moshe Rabbeinu's name, that's something that concerned him, that bothered him, why tzaddikim should suffer. And Eeyore, after his suffering comes, you'll remember Eeyore has a wonderful life in the beginning, has success, everything he touches turns to gold, he has a wonderful family, has a high position in society, everything's wonderful, and then his life crumbles. And after his life has crumbled and he's lost his health and he's in a state of terrible suffering, his three friends come to try and comfort him, and they debate the whole issue. He asks them why, and they try and answer him. He says these three axioms are irreconcilable, and they agree. Three axioms are not reconcilable. Therefore, one of them must be wrong. Eeyore says, I can't accept that any of them are wrong. I can't accept that any of them are wrong, and therefore I must assume that God has abandoned me to the forces of nature. But these things happen, it depends what astrological sign you're born under, it depends on trends, and it depends on all sorts of things, like the chartists with their economic cycles and things. They don't give you any reasons or anything, the chart's going up, the chart's going down, and that's how it is. Says Eeyore, I must assume that God has abandoned my fortune to the charts, to the astrological constellations, to nature, to physics, that's it. And these things happen, that's all, and I can accept that. That's the only way I can handle these three axioms. And the three friends say to Eeyore, but that in itself is attributing injustice to God. And a lack of omnipotence to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why would he abandon you? Answers Eeyore, he abandons me because I'm not important enough to him. The Ribbono Shel Olam is great and very high, and we're ordinary human beings, and we're not important enough to the Ribbono Shel Olam. What are we? No, say the three friends, we believe you must have done wrong, you're not a tzaddik. We're not prepared to accept that there's no Ashgacha Pratis. We do accept that there must be meaning in your suffering, and therefore the only answer is that you've done wrong. You're not a tzaddik. God must be omnipotent. That we know. That is taka an axiom. And God is just. That is an axiom. But that you are a tzaddik is not an axiom. For us, the reader, it's an axiom because we're told that in the beginning of the Sefer. That's what makes the Sefer so fascinating. We know that he's a tzaddik. And he claims to know that he's a tzaddik. But the three friends haven't read the Sefer Eeyore, they've just seen the man. And they see the man suffering, and therefore they say the only one of those three principles which is questionable is your tzidkus. And therefore, although we don't know what you've done wrong, you must have done something wrong. So then he says, alright, so tell me what I've done wrong. If I'm suffering, then surely the purpose is to bring tshuva. And if I've got to do tshuva, tell me what I've done wrong. If you can pinpoint anything, you can go through my lives, you can question me on whatever you want to, show me where I've gone wrong. But if you can't show me where I've got wrong, then withdraw. You can't carry on saying I'm not a tzaddik if you can't tell me what I've done wrong. And they try everything. And he disproves them and he dispels them, and eventually he silences them.
And then comes the fourth friend, Eliyahu. And Eliyahu comes in very forcefully. And Eliyahu introduces in the 36th chapter part of what he's saying, by ki omnam lo shekin miloy, my words are not incorrect, I'm going to speak the truth. And secondly, you should know, Eliyahu, tmim deis imoch, I agree with you. I haven't come to argue with you. The three axioms are right, I accept all three. Now let's start reasoning. I accept that God is omnipotent, of course, we've all accepted that. I accept that God is just, we've all accepted that. But I also accept that you're a tzaddik. Now we can start reasoning. Now we can start figuring out this philosophy. And of course, now Eve's prepared to listen. And he starts with the first axiom. And he says, Hen kel kabir velo yimos. The first axiom is that although Hashem is omnipotent, he does not despise man. Kabir koach lev, man who has strong character. The Rebbe Hashem does not abandon a man of strong character, and he does not despise a man of strong character. Hashem is all-powerful, and man is very powerful too. We have the ability of approaching godliness. So don't diminish the stature of man. We are kabir koach lev, we have powerful hearts. And Hashem does not despise us, and he does not reject us. It's axiom number one. Number two, lo yechaye rosho u'mishpat aniyim yitay. Hashem will not sustain a wicked person, and he gives justice to poor people. Hashem is just. That's principle number two. Principle number three, lo yigra mitzadik eino ve'ez malochim lakise. Hashem does not take his eye off a tzadik for a moment, and he sometimes elevates him to royalty. Vayushivim lo netzach vayigbo, and he puts him there permanently and raises him still further. There is no limit to how high the Ribbono Shel'olam will raise the tzaddik. Axiom number three. All three axioms. You've got a kasha. You've got a question. Sometimes the tzaddik suffers. Ve'im asurim bazikim. And if you find them bound by chains, and says Rashi, Ve'im tire tzaddikim shiyu asirim bazikim shel yusurim v'chaloyim. If you will see tzaddikim who are suffering the chains of illness and pain, yelochdun bechad leyoni, they have been afflicted with the suffering of poverty, then you should know, vayaged lohem po'olom, he is communicating to them their deeds, ufishehem ki yisgaboru, and their sins, for they have become too big, too much. Now what is he saying here differently to the other three? So he's also saying, so if you do see a tzaddik suffering, you must know he sinned. So what is he saying different to the three friends? He's saying something very important different to the three friends. The three friends said, since the three axioms are irreconcilable, we must throw out one of them. And the one we must throw out is that you're a tzaddik. Eliyahu is not throwing out that one. He's saying there is such a thing as being a tzaddik and still suffering. We don't have to throw out any of the three axioms. There is such a thing as being a tzaddik and still suffering. Why is the tzaddik suffering? Hashem is communicating to them. Communicating what? Their wrongdoing. The chiddush of Eliyahu is, even a person who does wrong can be a tzaddik. A tzaddik is not a person who's never done wrong. That's a Christian view of a tzaddik. The Christian religion designed a human being who never did wrong. We don't know such a being. We don't have such a person. Never did an Avera? We don't know. Moshe Rabbeinu did wrong. Aaron HaKohen did wrong. David HaMelech did wrong. We don't understand their wrongdoings. On our level, it's impossible for us to grasp the fineness of their mistakes. But we see they did tshuva. We see they were punished. So we know that on their level, however we're going to attempt to understand it, we know one thing is for sure, that they did wrong on some level or other. Our greatest tzaddikim, does that mean they're not tzaddikim? Does that mean that Moshe Rabbeinu Chas V'Sholem wasn't a tzaddik? Even moments after he did wrong, even before he did the tshuva, was he not a tzaddik? Of course he's a tzaddik. Eliyahu introduces the concept which is a uniquely Jewish concept. That tzidkus does not depend on what you do and don't do only. What you do and don't do is part of it. But what's important is the approach to what you do and don't do, how you handle it. That's what's important. And therefore it is possible for a tzaddik to sin. And if it's possible for a tzaddik to sin, it is possible for a tzaddik to be punished. with Yisurim, to suffer Yisurim.
How does a tzaddik sin? Why does a tzaddik sin? Explains Rashi here, Vayaged lohem po'olom, Hashem communicates to them their actions. Explains Rashi, Ki biyusurim halalu, for with this suffering, this pain, Moedion, the Ribbono shel Olam, advises them, communicates to them,
Shechotu lefonov, that they have sinned. So when a tzaddik sins, when a real tzaddik sins, he's not sinning in b'meizid chas v'sholim. That's not a tzaddik. You know, tzaddik he sins because he doesn't realize that it's a sin. At that particular moment, he doesn't realize. The fineness, it's so fine that he doesn't conceive of it as a sin. Or as one of the ladies said today, he doesn't realize that he's on the level where to him that's a sin. Or that at that moment, it doesn't seem quite as serious to him as it should be. Can be. So he needs to be told that in fact what he did was wrong. And so Elihu says to him, it is not impossible that you, reviewing your life, cannot find any wrongdoing. And the Ribbono Shel'olam has to advise you that you've done wrong. And the way he does it is through Yisurim. And then he goes on to say, Vayigel oznom lamusor, he is revealing their ears with Musa, Vayomer, and he is saying ki yeshuvin me'ov, and that they must do tshuva from their wrongdoing. That is the communication. Im yishmu vayavidu yechal yomeim batoy v'shneim banim. If they listen and they serve Hashem, they will end their days in good and their years in pleasantness. V'im lo yishmu, and if they do not take heed, B'shelach ya'aviru, they die in violence, v'yigvor b'vlidoas, and they perish for lack of insight. They're not suffering for the original aviru now. That's also an interesting concept. The original aviru that they did, the original sin, might not have been serious enough to bring about their death. They are now dying because b'vlidoas, because they're not listening to the communication. Hashem is talking to them, they're not listening. For that one is guilty of death. Communication, one doesn't listen.
And we're going to analyze this on two levels. The first level is to understand this concept of the communication and to realize through that what all this means. In the normal case, the advent of suffering gives rise to tensions.
What is the tension? Why am I suffering? Or usually you'll find that the question is phrased with a different emphasis. Not why am I suffering. If the question was why am I suffering, then we would reach answers. The question is usually phrased, why am I suffering? In which case you'll never find an answer. If the emphasis is on the I, you'll never find an answer. If the emphasis is on the why, you will find an answer. And that's usually on the I. Why am I suffering? What did I do? Not what did I do. What did I do? And what Elihu is telling Eve is something else altogether. There's a Gemara which we've spoken about before, which is so difficult, that says, the Mishnah says, "Kashem shemavorchim al hatuivo, kach mavorchim al haro." In the same way that you make a brocha for good things, you make a brocha for bad things. Ask the Gemara, what does it mean in the same way? It's not the same way at all. It's a different brocha. For good things, you say shechiyonu, you say atuiv v'hamitiv. For bad things, you say dayo no emes. It's a completely different brocha. What's the comparison? Answer the Gemara, lekabluni b'simcha. There has to be the same joyous acceptance of bad experience as there is of good experience. How is that possible? How can one find joyous acceptance in bad experience? But we begin to see through this introduction of Elihu how that can be achieved. For if we see suffering as communication, then the moment of tension is created not when the suffering starts. The moment of tension is created when the aveiro is committed. When one is committed one aveiro, one enters the state of tension. Because if we realize what the consequences of sin are, then the moment we've committed the sin, what we have to now do is fear the consequences. And more important than that is to measure the extent to which it bothers the Ribbono Shel Olam. Sometimes a child performs, has a tantrum, gets upset about something. The most insecure thing that one can do in response to that is ignore it. The child feels terribly insecure. If one gives the child a frust, then the child knows he's got a parent. If one responds firmly, the child knows that he's got a parent. He feels the parent, and there's a feeling of security. He might cry a little, he might yell a little, but he'll yell himself into a very secure, comforting sleep. And he'll wake up the next morning very cheerful, in the full knowledge that he's got a parent that cares about him. If the child has a tantrum and you do nothing, the child wakes up in the morning in as bad a mood as he went to sleep. Because the tension has not been resolved. The fear that he's got parents who don't really care has not been resolved. We think that showing caring is only by showering goodness on the person about of whom one cares. But that isn't so. If one really cares, one cares even more when the person is going off than one cares when the person is doing good or when the person is going well. The real caring is the way we react when the person is not doing what the person should be doing. That applies in all areas. It's all very well when a person has a simcha to show caring. That's caring. It's all very well when a person has a tzorah to show caring. That's also caring. But there's another kind of caring altogether. When a person's not learning the way he should be learning, not using his potential, when a person isn't around where he should be around, the showing caring there is also to notice and to give a bit of musr where it's needed, a bit of encouragement where it's needed. That's also part of caring, and even more so when it comes to one's own children, how one has to do that. And so at the moment that one does wrong, one actually enters a state of tension, if one is a tzaddik. The fear is, when one enters, there are two kinds of fear. Now there's yiras ha'inish, the fear of punishment, and yiras ha'roimimus, the fear of God's exalted state. Two types of fear. The lower type of fear is, oh, what's going to happen now? I've committed an avera, what's going to happen to me? That's one kind of fear. Which is fine, it's a level of fear, but that's not the level of the tzaddik. The level of the tzaddik is, I've committed an avera, oh, I wonder if anything will happen to me. The worst thing is that nothing happens to me, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is indifferent, that he doesn't care to communicate to me, that he's prepared to let me go on this way. And so one enters into a state of tension and worry, maybe Hashem won't punish me. And you wait, and you wait. And then all of a sudden, comes the clap. What does that bring? Okay. The Ribbono Shel Olam values me. It's alright. Now, here's this communication. There's enormous relief of tension. That's the simcha. That's the way one has to make a brocha on Haro when something bad happens. And we realized if we were living in that tension before it happened, then when it comes we can have simcha. If there was no tension before it happened, there'll be no simcha, of course. If one does averas and all we're worried about is what's going to happen, and then all that happens is we get a traffic ticket, okay, so that's a kind of a simcha, I suppose. But if the punishment is worse than we expect it to be, there's no simcha. We do wrong and say, we do a little wrong. A little bit of Lashon Hara. And we lose hundreds of thousands of rands as a result of it. Whee, terrible thing. That's what's with simcha? There's no simcha? But if one talks a little bit of Lashon Hara and then one thinks, maybe nothing will happen, that's my nightmare. My nightmare is that nothing will happen. That the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't care. That's my nightmare. And I wait and wait and wait. And I open the newspaper and I see this company I invested has gone in and it's all lost everything. Okay. I'm a tzaddik. That means I'm a tzaddik. It's a wonderful news. That's how a tzaddik relates to Yisurim. It's the most wonderful communication to him. Because he realizes that there's give and take. He realizes that there's communication. He realizes that Ribbono Shel Olam cares. Says Eliyahu to Eliyahu, you should be thrilled. You've obviously done something wrong, but don't worry, that doesn't mean you're not a tzaddik. On the contrary, the fact that you're being punished means you are a tzaddik. So this reinforces the three axioms. It doesn't detract from them. What were the three axioms? God's omnipotent? Yes, he is. God is just? Yes, he is. You're a tzaddik? Yes, you are. So why are you suffering? Because you're a tzaddik, you're suffering. That's the proof that you're a tzaddik. That's the first time that anybody says anything to Eve, which begins to make sense to him. That there can be suffering and I can still be a tzaddik. and the suffering can be meaningful, and the suffering can be purposeful, and it can relate to my deeds. Why does it have to be that way? Why couldn't there be other ways of communicating? The preferred way that the Ribbono Shel Olam communicates with is through Nevi'im. Let the Ribbono Shel Olam send a Novi. And the Novi should come and knock on Eve's door and say, Eve, this is what you did wrong. This is when you did wrong. This is why it's wrong. Please do tshuva. If you don't do tshuva, there's going to be punishment. If Hashem really loves us, why bring punishment? Why not do it through a Novi? And that Rav Avraham Grudzinski explains brilliantly with a Gemara where you remember Shmuel HaNovi is going to find the king after Shaul is rejected. And he goes and he finds, he's told to go to the family of David HaMelech, David's father, which he does, and he goes to the oldest son, he assumes it's the Bechor. And he chooses, he's about to take Eli of the Bechor. And says the Ribbono Shel Olam to him, "Loi b'zeh bochar Hashem." He says, "Vayomer Hashem el Shmuel." And Hashem says to Shmuel, "Al tabit el mareyu." Don't look at his stature. Ve'el gavoy kamasoy. Don't look at his height. Ki me'astiu, because I have rejected him. I have despised him. What was he despised for? Why was he rejected? Really, it should have been Eliyahu, because the Gemara learns earlier on that even if a person has had gedulo paskin for him in Hashemayim, that Hashem has decided that a particular person is fit for a high position, if he was kreis, if he lost his temper ever, if he got angry, moridi nuso, he loses that status. And the Gemara brings the proof from this case of Eliyahu. So we see Eliyahu was fit to be the king. He had the stature, he had the mind, he had the character, he had the personality, he had the talents, he had everything to be the king. But once he lost his temper, he got angry. Moridi nuso. But it's interesting that Shmuel couldn't perceive that. So we see that there is an inability on the part of the Novi sometimes to perceive the wrongdoings of an individual. Can the individual perceive it himself? If a Novi can't, can I? So that means if I want to know if I'm on the right track, it doesn't help going to a Novi. I can go to a prophet and say, am I doing anything wrong? And I can see from this Gemara that if the Novi says, no, you're not doing anything wrong, that doesn't mean I'm okay. Because had Eliyahu said to Shmuel, have I done anything wrong? Shmuel would have said, no, I would take you as king. So that means the Novi couldn't see that. The Novi wasn't aware of Eliyahu's slip-up. Only Eliyahu could have been aware of it. How do we know that? That's from another fascinating Gemara that we can see. To what extent the Torah trusts us in self-analysis, more than a Novi even. Because when it comes to ourselves, the Gemara says in Brochus and Daf Vov, Daf Hey, Im Roye Odom Shi Yusurim Boyim Olov, if a person sees that suffering is coming his way, Yefash Besh B'Maisov, he must examine himself. Which fits into what we're learning. Something's wrong. Pish Pesh V'Loy Motso, what happens if he examines himself and he can't find anything wrong? He's gone through his life and he can't find that he's done anything wrong. Then yitle bevitul toyo. Then you must assume that although it's not because you've done anything wrong, but it's amazing, the Torah is already trusting us to be able to say, I've done nothing wrong. The Gemara doesn't say, if you can't find anything wrong, go to a Novi. Ask the Novi whether you've done anything wrong. Because we know, we've established already, a Novi can't help. You know whether you've done anything wrong. And if you haven't done anything wrong, then what? Then you must assume that the reason is because you haven't exploited your potential to the full. That you could have learnt more, you could have contributed more, you could have perceived more. There was time you didn't utilize properly. There was mental energy you didn't utilize properly. There was spiritual and emotional energy you didn't utilize properly. And that's why you're suffering. So if the Gemara would stop there, I would still understand it. So you've got to try and find anything you've done wrong. You trusted to say, I've done nothing wrong. But then you must assume that you haven't used your full potential. But the Gemara goes on. Vim tol avalei motza. And if the person then says, no, I cannot accept that either. Not only have I done nothing wrong, but I have utilized my full potential. I couldn't have done anything more than I did. Then biyaduash yusurim shel avohem. Then you know it's yusurim shel avo. Suffering of love. Whatever that means. The point for which I'm bringing this Gemara is that the Torah trusts us to go to the point where you're able to say, not only have I not sinned, but nor have I omitted to do what I am capable of doing. Shmuel Anovi didn't know that Eliyahu had sinned, but Eliyahu could know that himself. A prophet can't know whether I fulfilled my potential, but I can know it myself. The ultimate of self-knowledge, the Gemara regards to be in the hands of the individual himself. He knows himself. He might need help in the skills, we say, a person who's tied up can't let himself go. He needs somebody to help him cut the ropes. He can't do it himself. So for skills, sometimes one needs help in the skills. But in the analysis, we don't need help. To know where one's going wrong, there's nobody better qualified than ourselves. Which goes against the views of a lot of current thinking in psychology and education and Rabbonus and everything else, where counseling is becoming a fashionable thing to do, and psychotherapy and all these things. And if it's there to give a person the skills he needs, fine, okay. If it's there sometimes just to give a sounding board, I suppose also, sometimes an expensive sounding board, but alright, that's up to the person. But if a person thinks that his psychoanalyst or his therapist or his counselor can put his finger on the problems, there's nobody more qualified than ourselves to do it. We have to put our fingers on our own problems, and we can do so. And we're trusted to do so. There's nobody better qualified than us to do it. And so we see that a Novi can't do it. A prophet can't do it. Why not? Why does Hashem not give that power to a prophet? Give the power. Give so much power to a prophet. So much knowledge, so much insight. Give him a little more too. Give him the insight also to be able to know when I've done wrong so that I don't have to suffer Yisurim. That a prophet can come and tell me. We answered that in two ways. Number one, that is an infringement on the privacy of the individual. It's nobody else's business what averas I've done or what averas you've done. That's between me and the Ribbono Shel Olam. Not even a prophet's business. And it would be an infringement of my privacy and an embarrassment beyond ability to tolerate if a Novi came every time I did wrong and said, I'm watching you, saw what you did, not nice, do tshuva. One couldn't live with that. There's such a thing as privacy, one's averas, or one's own personal business. Again, not very popular today. The American view is that nothing is private. Everything has to be thrown out and talked about and brought to the surface and put on the table, as they say. Everything has to be vomited out to be of any kind of value. And that is sickening. And that's the environment which is leading the world at the moment. There's this feeling of this need to talk it out and to talk it out the most intimate things. It's nobody's business. And one has to be able to say that's nobody's business. One has to be able to say that when it is oneself. Somebody asks me, it's none of your business. And one has to say it when it's the other way around, when somebody comes and wants to make confessions and talk it out, and why is this happening to me and what have I done wrong? One has to be big enough to say, none of my business. I don't know what you've done wrong and I don't care what you've done wrong. You sort it out yourself with the revelation. It's a completely different way of handling people's sorrows. I can be with you while you do so. I can sympathize with you. I can hold your hand. I can give you skills. I can teach you how to daven. But leave me out of it. It's your business. Completely novel approach to the handling of counseling. And I made the point in the shiur this morning. In some areas we know it instinctively. If a person comes to me and says, I don't know what I've done wrong, but so-and-so doesn't seem to like me. I seem to have done wrong to so-and-so. They don't greet me. When I greet them, they don't answer me. They insult me. And I don't know what I've done wrong to them. What do I answer? Go and ask them. It's nothing to do with me. You think you have a problem with so-and-so, go and find out what you've done wrong. And when somebody comes to me and says, I don't know what I've done wrong, the Ribbono Shel Olam is punishing me, and I'm suffering, and I don't know what I did, why me? Now I get very honored. Coming to ask me why God is punishing him. Oh, I'm now the representative of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Good, take a seat. Let's analyze. It's just arrogance. The answer is exactly the same. Why are you asking me? You have a problem with God? Sort it out with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's between you and the Ribbono Shel Olam. It has nothing to do with me. And the responsibility has to be thrown right back into the hands of the person who's suffering. That's why they're suffering. I can sympathize. I can give skills. I can help. We can discuss tefillah. We can discuss mechanisms and systems, But why you're suffering has nothing to do with me. I don't want to know why you're suffering. It isn't my business to know why you're suffering. If it was, then Hashem would have appeared to me in a dream, and he would have told me, I'm going to bring suffering onto so-and-so, and this is the reason why. Go and tell them. But Hashem doesn't do that. I've never had such a dream, and I hope I never will. And therefore, it's none of my business, nor anybody else's business, why somebody else is suffering. And people love to talk about, why are they suffering so much? Why is so-and-so suffering? None of your business why they're suffering. You have to be able to take that. That's a level of maturity that needs to be achieved in being able to relate to these things and understanding that certain things are none of our business. And to be able to carry on life knowing that it's none of our business. And the second reason that Hashem doesn't use a Novi is because if we come to do tshuva because of our own suffering than because we're instructed to do by an outsider. Do it ourselves, even though we then do tshuva to alleviate the suffering, that's fine. That means we're acknowledging that the suffering has been caused by ourselves, and we want to do tshuva to alleviate. That's a higher level of tshuva than it would be if we responded merely to the instruction of a Novi. Be that as it may, we see, as Rashi says, "Ki biyusurin halalu moedion shechotu lefono." This is Hashem's method of communicating to tzaddikim that they have in fact sinned. That's what it is. That's yusurin, and therefore yusurin should be a source of great pride to a tzaddik and of great joy to a tzaddik. That's how Rashi learns this section of Tanakh. The Malbim learns it a little different. The Malbim is going to do something even harder. He's going to also leave the three axioms intact. Hashem is omnipotent, just, and Eve is a tzaddik. But he's going to adopt the extreme and ultimate definition of a tzaddik. Somebody who has never sinned. Or if his sin is already done true. Somebody who has no crosses against his name. Absolutely clean. That's harder. Up till now, the Chiddush and the way Rashi learnt it was that a tzaddik doesn't mean somebody who's never sinned, and therefore there can be suffering even for a tzaddik. That's how Hashem communicates. It's not punishment, it's communication. The sin was not so serious that it needs such punishment. The purpose of the punishment is communication. But the Malbim wants to say no. Even, we can understand this even on the basis that the tzaddik has never done anything wrong. Nothing at all. What then? This whole concept is so relevant because it's amazing how people operate. The different things. The one is people get into guilt when they suffer, which is completely self-defeating. Guilt which doesn't lead, not positive guilt, but guilt which just incapacitates them. Or they attribute it to external sources. Eve's whole response, which we consider so out of it, it's crazy, funny. What does Eve say? God abandoned me to the forces of science. It's almost idolatrous. But that's what we do all the time. If I come to you and say, interesting, why did you lose that money? What do you answer? Stock market collapsed. What are you saying? I'm subject to forces beyond anybody's control. I say to you, why did you get ill? You say, interesting, you should ask. I was out in the rain without a coat on. That's why. I caught it. I was next to somebody who had it. I caught it from somebody. That's why. Explaining why. That is, all these things are explaining how, as we've discussed before. It's not explaining why. It's explaining the cause away, leaving out the moral side of it altogether. It has nothing to do with me. It's not because Hashem is watching me and Hashem, for some reason, is communicating something to me, and I don't know what, maybe. But something is communicating. By attributing all the suffering that takes place to causes which are scientific, we really are accepting that it's not us. It's not moral. It doesn't have a moral value to it. Now the Malbim comes in the second one. He says, right, even if a person's a tzaddik, now we've got a fellow who changes or gets sick, and he says, God is omnipotent, God is just, tzaddik, and it's nothing. I haven't done adequate truth.